you've tuned into American politics lately, you probably know our civil discourse can feel kind of uncivil. Our next guests say we need to change that, and we can. They're holding conversations with academics, journalists, political leaders, and members of the public to figure out ways to bring back civil discourse across party lines. That's all part of a UW-Madison conference called Renewing Civic Life in Wisconsin, Fulfilling the Legacy of Bill Krause. It starts at 9 tomorrow morning at Gordon Commons on UW-Madison's campus. It's open to the public, and you could stream it live on Zoom. You can find info at WPR.org/Central Time. And you could join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Do you want to see the way we talk about politics change? What would it take to change it for the better? Have you had experiences in your own life talking to people with different political beliefs? Have you stopped talking to friends, family, coworkers because of political differences? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Mike Wagner is a professor in UW-Madison School of Journalism and Mass Communication. He's affiliated with the Department of Political Science and the La Follette School of Public Affairs. He's a faculty affiliate at the Elections Research Center. Mike, welcome back to the show.
It's great to be here, Rob.
And Louis Friedland is a professor in UW-Madison School of Journalism and Mass Communication. He's with the Department of Sociology, and he founded and directs the Center for Communication and Democracy. Lou, welcome back to you as well.
Thank you, Rob. Good to see you.
I want to start by talking about Bill Krause, the inspiration for this conference. I've interviewed him. I used to book him on talk shows all the time. When I saw his name, I think I get what this conference is about. Mike, can you talk a little bit about him?
Sure. Bill Krause was a person who helped make careers of Republican politicians in Wisconsin in the 1970s and 80s. He was, you know, a person kind of responsible for running the Dreyfus campaign for Governor Dreyfus. He also was really important in negotiating and making the UW system happen in getting the landmark 1982, I think, gay rights bill passed in Wisconsin. And the reason he was able to do those things was kind of the reason we want to have this conference. He was very well known for talking across party lines. He was a partisan Republican who worked with Democrats, who trusted that you could have conversations with people who you disagreed with to find common ground to achieve something. And after he stopped his work in kind of, you know, political life when it came to working in government, then he ran Common Cause in Wisconsin for a few decades, the watchdog group which monitors government spending and how government uses its power. And so he's a person who is universally respected amongst Republicans and Democrats in our state, and his orientation towards civility, compromise, trust, building trust across lines of difference are the sort of things we want to highlight and have a conversation about with our guests and folks who want to come to Gordon Commons tomorrow at 9. We'll be there 9 to 5, open to the public.
And Lou, do you want to jump on that point there, learning from Bill Krause, taking those lessons this conference tomorrow and trying to recreate that concept of, hey, we can talk to each other?
Right. I think that's – Bill Krause really did represent the ability to talk to each other. It's really in some ways that simple. He was also an incredibly nice guy. I used to appear on him on the old weekend show on Wisconsin Public Television some years ago. And Bill, first of all, he knew almost everything about Wisconsin politics. There literally wasn't a topic that he couldn't talk about knowledgeably off the top of his head. And he was just such a nice person.
Now, Mike, you and actually you've been part of a team doing research on how we talk about politics, the media we watch, things like that. And the concept of, hey, this guy's a Republican, but he worked with Democrats. He talked to Democrats. He got along with Democrats. Seems like a quaint throwback to a different era. What kind of things are you looking for these days in your research about how we've moved away from that?
Well, we see at the legislative level in our state that there's not a lot of conversation across party lines, at least that takes place publicly, that's very positive. There's a lot of gridlock. There's a lot of the governor, say, calling a special session and the legislature, you know, the other party gaveling in and gaveling out. And so we see lots of those kinds of things, or the legislature passing a high number of bills and the governor vetoing them. And so there's not a lot of conversation across party lines that seems very productive amongst our elites. But we also see that conversation And then the conversations that happen on social media, talk radio, and the news around that is bleeding into our own regular daily lives in Wisconsin. And so things we've discovered in our own research show that more than 6 in 10 Wisconsinites say that they've stopped talking about politics to somebody because they disagree. Most of those they put in the family and friend category. So it's not that they go to work and agree just to talk about the Badgers or the Packers. It's family and friends that they're stopping talking politics with. And 1 in 5 say that they've just outright ended a familial relationship or friendship because of these disagreements. And that's just not common in our relatively recent history in our state. We've been able to talk across party lines. People like Bill Krause did that very productively, and we're seeing less and less of that as partisan animus, contentious politics, misinformation, all these sorts of things bubble up and make it much more difficult to have productive conversations across party lines.
And Lou, I could see this being a downward spiral. If we're talking to each other less, we're going to know each other less, we're going to like each other less, we're going to talk less. What are the prospects for turning that around?
I'm not sure. That's a good question, Rob. And I think the question is, are there places where we can have civil conversations? Where are the spaces where people will talk to each other across different lines of disagreement? You know, WPR is one of those places where people do manage to have that public conversation. But what we need to have, and encouraging them is difficult, there's more conversations in the networks and the social spaces that people actually live in. Just like people are separating in those spaces, we need to figure out ways that they can begin to talk to each other again. They may not agree. In fact, chances are very good that they won't agree on many things, but to at least be able to listen to someone.
And there's nothing, like, in principle wrong with people disagreeing. I mean, our country was designed to have disagreeing parties come together and agree, you know, or compromise at least somewhere along the way. How do we get back to civil disagreement, though?
I think one thing has to do with people being willing to accept the idea that when somebody disagrees with them, it doesn't automatically mean that that person's values and value are suspect. People might highlight different values in their own individual lives, and they might apply those to the things they would like to see happen politically. And it's not necessarily that people are nefarious or have ill intent with views they have that are different than our own. And so when I talk to people about engaging in conversation across party lines or talking with the family around, say, the Thanksgiving dinner table about misinformation when people are sharing things that aren't true, I would say aim for the heart and not the head, right? If facts worked, we wouldn't need to do more than present facts to people. But part of this is that we have to trust each other well enough and be willing to listen to each other to say, you have a different view than me. Why don't you tell me about that, rather than me saying to myself, well, when he's done talking, I will let him know why I am right, which is just a less productive way to engage in conversation about really tough matters that we ask our elected officials to help resolve for us.
Talking to Mike Wagner and Lou Friedland from UW-Madison School of Journalism and Mass Communication. They are organizers of a big conference tomorrow aimed at helping restore civic conversations about politics, civil conversations about politics here in Wisconsin. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Let's go to your calls now. John is with us in Brookfield. John, hi.
Hey, how you?
Good. What did you want to bring up, John?
Yeah, I work for a trucking company, and I am one of four of about 130 truck drivers that are a Democrat. When we come in the morning, we wait for our loads in a driver's room, and all you hear is complaining back and forth between the Republican people and the Democratic people. And it's just, I'm almost to the point where I want to quit the job. I've been there 10 years. I love the job, but it's like everything's so volatile now because of if you're a Democrat or Republican, it's horrible.
Are there things you could talk to your colleagues about, John? Is sports a safe topic or just down?
No, we have a TV in there and there's sports on all the time. And for some reason, it turns into politics.
Huh. Interesting. John, thanks a lot for sharing that story. John's not alone. A lot of people, I think, Lou, find themselves in workplaces, in families, whatever, where they're the odd. I've talked to listeners who say, I'm in my community, I'm the odd one out.
Yeah, in workplaces in particular, Rob, there's good research that shows that actually that's where there are lines of difference, because people generally aren't screened for their politics before they get a job, whatever it might be. And yet, so you have more heterogeneous or different kinds of people in the same room in a workplace. And that means, of course, that there's more likely to be some disagreement. And then how that gets processed is it's a tricky subject, right? Because if you're working alongside someone, you want to get along with them. You probably don't want to be engaged in conflict. But if they've pressed your political hot button, it's very hard. You know, people stop sitting there having that fluid conversation and start to wait, as Mike said, to jump in on the conversation. And then a vicious spiral gets set off.
Thanks a lot for sharing your experience. We'll go now to Denny in Ogdensburg. Denny, hi.
Hi, I've taken a different tack. When I'm a political animal, I study these things, and I ask people just to tell me when they want to talk, what are the four or five most important things to them? And I just listen till they're done talking, and they generally say, what's important to you? And I respond generally by acknowledging that whatever they had on their list is important to me, but it may not be the most important thing. And what stuns me is what Winston Churchill said, you want to find the biggest problem with democracy, spend 5 minutes talking to the average voter. It stuns me how few people know the difference between the deficit and the debt or the CO2 level or the cost of health care. They just get tied up in the minutiae, but by me letting them talk about what's important to them, then acknowledging that and taking it from there, it's worked for me.
Denny, thanks a lot for sharing that. Mike, I've talked to people who talk about how to talk through conflict, and they say, don't start with the controversy. Start with values, and you're probably going to find some shared values like Denny says he did.
I think that's right, and our own work bears that out a bit as we look at people who have conversations across lines of difference and can do so in ways that aren't bringing up the tension are also people who tend to be more moderate in their politics. They tend to split their tickets more when they vote. And so people who are, you know, exposed in these situations, both like your first caller was talking about and then like Denny was talking about, there are elements of it that are uncomfortable, right? But there are also benefits because you get to learn about what the other side thinks. And sometimes that can actually have a moderating influence on our own views to say, oh, you know, these people aren't, you know, they don't have the negative traits that my preferred news sources tell me the other side has. These are people I can see living and breathing right in front of me, and when we have those kinds of interactions, they can help to moderate us. They don't always, right? Sometimes people are going to push our buttons, and as Denny says, if it's something I really care about, I'm probably not open to changing my opinion about it as compared to an issue where I don't think about it as much. And so it's very complicated, which is why it's such a hard set of problems to solve.
Thanks for that call, Denny. We're talking to Mike Wagner and Lou Friedland from UW-Madison School of Journalism and Mass Communication, here to talk about a conference they're hosting tomorrow called Renewing Civic Life in Wisconsin. Find info about how to participate in person or online at WPR.org/Central Time, and you can call in at 800-642-1234. What do you think we can do to change the way we talk with each other about politics, especially when we disagree? Has it been an impossible dream for you and your family or your workplace to have a civil conversation about political issues? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We're picking up our talk with Mike Wagner and Lou Friedland from UW-Madison School of Journalism and Mass Communication. With us today to talk about a conference they're hosting tomorrow about restoring civic life and civil conversation here in Wisconsin. Let's go back to your calls at 800-642-1234 with Elise in Ashland. Elise, hi.
Hi, can you hear me?
Loud and clear. What did you want to bring up, Elise?
Excellent. Well, you know, what you were talking about, you know, the system being designed to handle disagreements and such like, and to some extent it was, and to some extent it wasn't, right? You know, the system was definitely designed to accommodate differences of opinion on, you know, whether or not to go to war with France, but on whether or not to, you know, curtail slavery, whether or not to limit the power of the wealthy. Those are things that our Constitution was not really designed to allow. And when people did start having disagreements, it did end in bloodshed. And I'm very much of the belief that it couldn't have gone any other way. And now, you know, to use a more modern example, you know, so the idea is that, you know, with this golden age where people would sit down and talk and come to compromises, had a lot of assumptions about who was making the compromises on behalf of whom. In my personal case, you know, I'm a trans woman, and you know, when I can, and of course there's all this talk about when someone gets to know a member of a community that's being questioned, right? Then of course they'll be more receptive. Well, you know, my biological father, who I'd known since birth, when I came out, he forbade the entire family to have anything to do with me, to have any contact with me. My grandmother's sick right now, and I'm actually asking to be allowed to visit her in the hospital. But he'd voted Democrat every time in his life, but I believe he's voted Republican ever since then. I don't know. He hasn't spoken to me for 6 years.
I'm sorry to hear that, Elise. Best on dealing with that family situation, but Elise makes an interesting point. Lou, we sometimes think of a golden age where people got together and, you know, compromised, but it might have been a small elite subset, and a lot of people weren't at the table in the first place.
Well, certainly there was a period, there have been recurring periods in American life where large groups of people were excluded from the table, and worse, were persecuted, as Elise's story invokes. And that's part of our history. There's no question about that. And some of that is conflict. And, of course, the Civil War and then the Jim Crow that followed was the largest simmering, ongoing, still ongoing conflict in American life. So no, it wasn't a simple case of we used to have a golden age and now it's declined. That said, there have been also cyclical periods when people could work out differences. There, civil society ebbs and flows. In the pre-Civil War period, it was obviously coming apart, and the Civil War was the result of that coming apart. In the post-war period, despite continuing racism and sexism, there was also a way that people could resolve disagreements institutionally. Unions, for example, made a huge difference in bringing people together across race and gender lines to some extent, and allowing people to say we have some common views and common interests. So institutions do matter. Institutions have fault lines, and when those fault lines start to split apart, then conflict in everyday civil life also becomes more exacerbated.
Elise, thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. Talking about civil society and civil political communication in Wisconsin with Lou Friedland and Mike Wagner from UW-Madison's School of Journalism and Mass Communication. Mike, we hear a lot about the places where we're divided. You know, we maybe watch different media outlets. We do different things. In your research, have you found remaining at least vestiges of places where people from different backgrounds, different opinions can interact in a positive or at least neutral way?
There are a few political issues even where there's broad agreement across party lines, and one of which is a really hot button one in Wisconsin that WPR News did a great podcast about. I'm looking at redistricting. And in Wisconsin, in our survey, majorities of Democrats, Republicans, and independents support a nonpartisan redistricting commission. And this is especially remarkable because the Republicans in our sample who say we would prefer a nonpartisan commission recognize that they're the beneficiaries of the current system in terms of how redistricting works in Wisconsin. So there are places, there are issues where citizens across party lines recognize issues of basic fairness and how those things might manifest themselves from a policy point of view.
Lou, I wanted to ask you about the media in all of this. That covers a lot of ground. There's some media outlets who exist to exacerbate, I think, these differences. For those who aren't doing that, though, are there things you think that we could be doing to help provide forums for civil communication?
Well, I think one of the biggest changes in Wisconsin's always had historically a very healthy newspaper industry. Every town of any size, 5,000-10,000, had a daily newspaper that covered the ongoing affairs of that community. As we all know who've been following this, and I think most listeners do too, those newspapers have shrunk. They've been consolidated into ever larger sets of corporations. And their budgets have shrunk, and so they cover the community less and less. That was a space of common conversation. The media, particularly newspapers, and then print and television and radio tend to follow the newspapers for news. That was a space where a kind of implicitly civil conversation took place. As that's declined, there's less and less common space. And one of the things that's filled that void in Wisconsin is particularly, frankly, conservative talk radio.
Mike, the conference tomorrow, I know you've been living and breathing it for a while now. What are you hoping comes out of this event?
Well, we're hoping that we can have conversations about strategies to have productive conversation across lines of difference. We also want to tell the truth about what we know empirically about the state of democracy, the state of civil society in Wisconsin. We want to hear perspectives from journalists, so we'll have a more academic panel at about 10:15. We'll hear from journalists at 1:15. We'll have a keynote from Tommy Thompson, former governor, at 4 o'clock. All of this in Gordon Commons on campus, all open to the public. What we're hoping to get out of it is beginnings of conversations. Let's start conversations about things we might be able to agree on. Let's start conversations at least that establish that we want to keep having conversations about hard issues, which is something that we ought to be able to do in a state like ours, where people are deeply informed as compared to folks in other states. They are more participatory as compared to folks in other states. And so we ought to be able to find ways to continue having hard conversations across party lines, where we've been lagging behind other states in recent years.
We'll leave it there. Mike, thanks for joining us today.
It's my pleasure.
And Lou, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Rob.
Been talking to Lou Friedland and Mike Wagner. They're both professors in UW-Madison School of Journalism and Mass Communication. With us today to talk about this conference they are hosting tomorrow. It's called Renewing Civic Life in Wisconsin, Fulfilling the Legacy of Bill Krause. The conference, as you heard, goes from 9 to 5 tomorrow at Gordon Commons on UW-Madison's campus. It's open to the public, and you could stream it live on Zoom. We've got conference information, details on how to connect via Zoom at wpr.org/centraltime. Find a link there. Check it out. Let us know if you appreciate what came out of it. Email ideas@wpr.org.